WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are getting the putting the band back together. And you know, when I put the Crab Cake tour schedule up, I had Sean over at Towson University. He said, "That's a hell of a schedule. I was starting things at Fadley's. You're going to Costas. You're going to Coco's. You're going to Pappas." Yes, 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 and yes. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll be giving away the Raven scratch-offs. Our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. Still making it happen for you. Buy two, you get two free. 5 years, 0% financing. And our newest sponsor for the Crab Cake Tour, our friends at Jiffy Lube Multicare. I got my oil change a couple weeks ago. I was working on my Baltimore accent with I had John Waters on the other day, and I was working on him. This guy has come home. He is our chief digital officer. That's a CDO to all of you out there. You can find him out at Web Connection. You can also find him out on the front of our website at BaltimorePositive.com. You know, you and I, like, at one point, sometimes we get together once a week. Sometimes we get together once a month. Sometimes time passes and, you know, the website and all the things we're doing at Baltimore Positive. But, like, you and I have been, like, ships, right? I mean, there's, like, a war in Israel. We did a little something on that, like, the first day. Now it feels like, my God, it's never going to end, God forbid. And now it feels like I traveled here. You went there. The Orioles got eliminated since that last time we got. I mean, we haven't been together since the Orioles were still together. And the band was still together. And the friggin' Texas Rangers weren't chips. And last time I got together with you, like, the Ravens, woe was us. And how are we going to finish a game? And now it's, let's go to the Super Bowl. Mike Rosenfeld joins us here from Web Connection, our chief digital officer. Man, I've been to Vegas. I've been partying with Sammy Hagar and Alice Cooper since the last time I saw you. Where the heck have you been, man?
I've been not all over the place like you've been, not yet. My travel picks up next week, all the way through probably February. So you were gone, but I was here holding down the fort.
Well, thank God for that.
Working on your end.
You did good work with the Ravens. I'm not going to blame you for the Orioles, though.
Did you really hang out with Sammy Hagar?
Did not hang out. No.
I know you have hung out with Michael Anthony and the old Van Halen in the past, but didn't know if you hung out with them.
I've had several encounters with Sammy Hagar in my life, and this is honest to God how I feel. And I like, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. This is straight up. I flew to Greenville, South Carolina to chase the ghost of my mother, if that makes any sense. I don't think I've talked about this on the air at all. I think maybe Dennis and I talked a little bit about the food and a little bit about family and him being Greek and going back to Greece and what it means to go to a place where your people are from. And you and I discussed Israel at length a month ago when the conflict began over there and all the awfulness in the beginning with Hamas and the kidnapping and the deaths and all the mess. And Greenville, South Carolina is near my mom's hometown, which is Abbeville, South Carolina, which is maybe 50 miles south of Greenville, 80 miles west of Columbia, 60 miles northeast of Augusta, and I don't know, 130 miles from Atlanta. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's maybe an hour from Clemson, but it's really remote. And when Sammy was playing down there in this place, I got a ticket in the eighth row, single ticket. My wife was always sort of, it's the middle of the week. It's October near my birthday. She was doing some traveling. She's doing some traveling this week. It's a surprise. Sorry, I can't talk about it. But I went down to South Carolina chasing my mom's ghost, and Sammy's playing. And so my Sammy stories are like this. I love Sammy. He played the Towson Center, Red Rocker back in the day. And then he joined Van Halen. And when he joined Van Halen, I was the music critic. And I had interviewed Alex Van Halen on the 5150 tour at the beginning. And I went up to Philadelphia and I wound up like pounding beers. I was 17, drinking Heineken. I don't like Heineken, but I was drinking it because Alex Van Halen was giving it to me. So met Sammy. Everybody was cranked up. It was 5150 tour. It was 1986. I was 17. It was what it was. So then they come back in 92, 3, 4. And Mike Messina and I were very friendly at that period of time, beginning of my radio career. And they were playing Meriwether. And because I had been the music critic for 7 years, the Meriwether people, Gene Parker, they were all still there. Mike Messina was with me. They invited us backstage. I knew their band manager, a guy named Ed Leffler, who passed away. He also managed several bands of that era. But he was the one that sort of put the Sammy Hagar version. If you look up Ed Leffler, L-E-F-F-L-E-R, much like Bob Leffler, but Ed Leffler, he died maybe 20 years ago. He's a beautiful man. And he was a band manager in L.A., and he sort of orchestrated Van Halen, sort of got 50 got Sammy into the band and made it work for the period of time that it worked. So in 1999, I was syndicated, Sporting News Radio, 101 Sports, and CBS was trying to do some cool stuff on their pregame, bring on musicians and bring on people. Sammy Hagar wound up being a part of it and got offered to me on the radio to do a segment. And we did, like, I don't have it. I can't find it. Not everything I did when I was syndicated. I can't find John Wooden. But I interviewed Sammy for 15 minutes on Nasty Nationwide at that time. And Sammy's like, hey, dude, you love the band. You got to come out and party. And I'm like, hey, I'm seeing you in L.A. He's like, backstage. So they set it all up. I got it. This is where you're going to love this part of the story. This is the part I've never told, I don't think. So it's before I was married. It was the year the Ravens won the Super Bowl. It was a weekend of, like, we played in Arizona that year. You can go look it up. McAllister had a big game. I think Boulware picked off a ball to win the game at the end. Maybe they won like 15-12. It was a crazy game. Sharper was involved. It was right around the time Trent Dilfer took over. That was the day Trent Dilfer told me he was going to do my show. It was in a little shack behind Arizona State Stadium, Sun Devil Stadium. So that weekend, I went out to L.A. to see Sammy Hagar. And I had backstage passes. I had a girl that I liked on the West Coast I was dating, took her to the show. She loved Sammy Hagar. She was super cool. We go backstage. You're going to love this. What is Sammy Hagar known for on stage? It's still, to this day, 2 weeks ago, Mas Tequila.
Yeah.
Jack Daniels with Michael Anthony in the bass, mm-hmm. right? Drinking, partying, yeah. all of that, right? You're going to love this. They played the Universal Amphitheater in L.A. This is in December of 2000. November, December 2000. You can look it up. So the Universal Amphitheater is where Universal is in Hollywood. And it's an amphitheater, but it was sort of at one time outdoor. I saw Engelbert Humperdinck there in 1985, and it was outdoor. It's now indoor, been covered over. It's more like an indoor Merriweather, if that means. Like, it's weird, right? But it's a place. So I go out there, get my backstage passes. We get there early, set up, like, do the whole thing. And they invited us to sit on the stage during the show. So if you saw the Sammy tour, the tour was the stage is a bar. You can Google this, right? There are 50 fans sitting at cocktail tables drinking Mas Tequila, margaritas, right? Like, literally, the song Mas Tequila.
This is Sammy Solo?
Sammy Solo after Van Halen 2000. Okay. Sammy's estranged from Van Halen. Right. He's out doing I Can't Drive 55, Mas Tequila, open in Cabo Wabo. This is still 24 years ago. It's a long time ago, right? So we go backstage, and the first thing that happens is we get stopped by someone with an earpiece just like this, and it's their security people and their PR and their backstage team, and they had a legal rider for us to sign, saying that we would not consume alcohol of any kind on the stage. Everything in all of the pitchers was Kool-Aid. Like, literally, it was sweet. It was red, like Hawaiian punch on stage the whole night. And they were very clear that if you brought a beer on and you went to pee and you snuck a beer back, you would be thrown off stage. Like, everything was in the rider. And I'm thinking, wah, wah. So 2 weeks ago, I go to see Sammy. Well, the in-between story is I'm in Napa Valley in 2009, 10, 11 maybe. My wife was still a blonde. It was before she had cancer, maybe 10, 11, 12. And one of my dearest friends in the world, Julio Bermejo, Google him. He's been on the show. He owns Tommy's Mexican Restaurant and Tequila in San Francisco. He took us on a wine tour of Napa because we'd never been to Napa. But because he's Julio and because he's connected to, like, the entire spirit world, and I've traveled the world with him. I've been on four continents with Julio. Julio and I are crazy. And plus Cuba. And that story came up a couple weeks ago. He was a part of their Andy Summers thing. Julio knows Sammy well. And, like, we all happened to be in Napa at this on the same day. Total serendipity. And we wound up getting really hammered on really, really expensive wine in a cellar with Sammy. That's the picture you've seen. Me with Sammy and my wife. That was, I don't know, 2.5-3 hours of a lot of wine at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on, like, a Wednesday in the middle of Napa. And we just wound up hanging out with Sammy Hagar, his friend, and two wives. There were seven of us all day hammered. And I haven't spoken to Sammy Hagar since. I haven't tried. I haven't, like, I left that day thinking there's, and I watch his TV show. I do all of that. But I didn't want to bother him in Greenville, South Carolina. You know what I mean? Like, I just, I probably could have done the elbow and the picture. And he's 76 years old. He's kicking ass, Mike, the way you want him to be. Were you a Sammy guy or a Dave guy? What were you?
I was raised on Dave. I love the Dave era, but Dave is such a clown. And I didn't realize how big a clown he was, you know, back in the early to mid 80s. But he is such a schmaltzy vaudeville guy.
Well, you know, his uncle owned the Cafe Wa. You know that story?
I do.
If you've been to Cafe Wa and you picture what it looked like in 1964, you would, everybody wanted to be on the Ed Sullivan Show, right? Like, it was a, it's.
I mean, for me, it was always about Eddie. My kids make fun of me and say I have a huge man crush on him, and I'll admit it. Growing up, I thought it was the greatest guitar god ever.
My wife thinks I have a thing with John Mayer, so that's okay. I don't, but it's, you know, she knows deep down it's really Getty, you know, really.
Right. But I've always found Sammy to be more mature, the adult in the room, you know, between him and Dave, just a better character guy. Dave just comes across as, frankly, a dickhead to me.
You know what, man? And like, as we get older, I'm 55, Sammy 76, you're wherever you are. Bands are tough. You know what I mean? Like, if I had to be in a relationship with the three people that were my best friends when I was 18 or 24 or 31 right now, you know, if I hit it big, like I saw Hootie and the Blowfish is going back out again next summer. I'm friends with those guys. I've known those guys from the beginning. Mark Bryan, and I text him today. Mark will come on the show. I know Sony, and Dean's a little more quiet, and Darius has been on the show. Darius had a child here in Baltimore for years, was always in the area. Darius's jam with Eddie Lauer down at Fells Point. Those four guys, like, they're a great example. Go Google the story, the backstory of their relationships and their friendship and Darius's thing. And they're putting the band back together and going out for 4 months next summer. I often think to myself, if the Police could get together, if the Talking Heads can get together on the same stage, you know what I mean? Even Van Halen without Michael, which was really kind of crappy of Eddie, you know, to kind of kick Michael out of the band and do all that. And now Wolf is what he is. And like, I'd love to talk to Wolf and but the rock and roll thing, when we talk about the drama of Odell Beckham or of the Lamar Jackson contract or anything in sports, you know, that could be portrayed in that way. Rock and roll gets a hall pass, right? For the drinking, the drugs, the girls, the misogyny, the whatever it is, rock and roll is like professional wrestling for those of us who love it. It's just its own little bubble.
Right. Well,
until your band, somebody dies, can't play. I went to see you too in Vegas. You were going to ask me about the Sphere and do all that, but we talked about before we went on the air. No Larry Mullen. And they're, you know, they have a different drummer and he just can't play. And they're like, well, dude, band's got to make money. You know, we're doing $12 million a night here. Like, we'll just get another drummer. And Larry's cool with that and whatever. But then I think about Rush has never been on stage. I'm going to see Getty next week, by the way.
Oh, because he's signing the book?
He's doing a tour. He's doing like a sit on stage. Tour. And here's the wild thing. He's promised an now unannounced guest interviewer. It's not me here, by the way, or at Massey Hall in Toronto. I'm going to be both. I'm thinking Alex Lifeson may be going out on stage with him and talking to him on stage.
Wow. That'd be
that
huge.
Would be something, right?
Yeah.
So this is what we have to hang on to is three quarters of you two in a bubble with Alice Cooper. I'm hanging on to the fact that I went to Sammy Hagar. And first thing my wife is like, How was he really? He's 76. Dude, he crushed it. I have all these videos. I was showing
was
it
the
to her.
Circle?
The
was
Circle. It? Yeah. Vic Johnson on guitar, Jason Bonham on drums, Michael Anthony playing the bass. But here's the thing. They're on stage last week in Greenville, and the whole thing is, Michael, you're a drunk. Yeah, here's some tequila. Have some Jack. Yeah, we're partying. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, I signed a rider 24 years ago. I was drinking Kool-Aid on stage with you. That's not tequila, Sammy. Come on, man.
There's a famous, I think it was the US Festival. If you remember the US Fest, the original US
Van
Festival.
Halen played that, yeah.
And David Lee Roth lifts a bottle of Jack Daniels and he feigns to the audience, "What? What?" And he says, this ain't iced tea. We ain't Quiet Riot." And then he chugs it. And I know no one can chug. I don't care how big a drinker you are. I can't imagine people chugging Jack Daniels and not having that
It's apple
in the
cider.
beer
Come
taste.
on, dude.
I
Of
mean,
course it is.
of course it is. And meanwhile, I just heard an interview with Steve O and Sammy that said that Eddie made Michael Anthony basically sign a document that said that he wouldn't get any royalties from the songs because he didn't contribute to the songs. Only Eddie and Sammy did, but of course Alex was his brother. And Michael signed it to stay in the band. This is before they kicked him out and replaced him with his son. But he also said, but he never enforced it, even though he signed it. He still gave him royalties to the song. But I thought that was pretty crappy too. It's just dysfunction, it's
Well, that's what I'm
unfortunate.
saying. Like trying to find four functional human beings to do web connection, to do WNST, to do Apple, to do Xerox, to do big companies, small companies, but there's always something involved, right? And the thing I will say for any band that's out there that's made it at this point, right? Like I had John Waters on last week. I've waited my whole life to have John Waters on. And I asked him, like, why are you still doing this? He's like, this is what I do. I go out. I've been going to college campuses since I was in college. I go out and talk to people. People ask me, like, at some point, do you not want to do the radio thing? I've retired once. I've retired twice. I'm like the Godfather. They keep pulling me back in. But there was a point where I hated doing this. I hated doing this, not the way I wanted to do it, with the people I didn't want to do it with anymore.
Right.
And I would say that for Sammy Hagar. And I would say this, we're in November now, and I probably every year of my life should have done a top 10 concerts of the year, like type of thing, because I see a lot of concerts. And I've seen really good bands this year, and I've seen Guns N' Roses this year. I've seen stuff that's just awful. And I've seen Chrissy Hynde, who's like 75 years old or whatever she is. I've seen Sammy Hagar, 76. I've seen Pat Benatar in her 70s. I don't know how old Bryan Adams is. Joan Jett's getting older. I've seen all of these bands, and they all have different realms of what your level of expectation, your what you want to hear and what they're going to play. Whether it's worth it financially, because a lot of this, but the one thing I have in common, and this is the real topic of the show, Mike Rosenfeld, this is where I'm going with this. I've had a lot of problems this year. There's one thing that I've had at every concert I've been to, every concert. And I know this is when you could talk about your friend Lowell and the CFG Bank Arena and go, I've seen the Eagles there. Let's go through this. Springsteen, Eagles, Bryan Adams, Joan Jett, Janet Jackson, Queen, John Mayer. I'll be seeing Kiss in a couple of weeks. This is all in an arena in Baltimore that did not exist this time last year, right? So
It
cheers to
had the circus, and that's it. And the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, no offense to them.
none taken. They've
Yeah.
also had LL Cool J and like a whole bunch of, they had a Hispanic performer this weekend that I don't even know who he is. And it wasn't Bad Bunny, but it was a Hispanic performer that sold out this weekend. Literally a performer I've never heard of. I saw Frank Remmes share it out on LinkedIn. I never heard of this performer, but they sold 14,000 tickets at whatever the price would be. The one thing I could say, and this I mean this from my heart, if I ever stop going to concerts, it's going to be because I kill someone or I go to jail for talking during the when Billy Joel is singing Vienna or Just the Way You Are. Shut up and put the F in there. Shut up. So I'm having a real American music etiquette problem. And I don't mean some concerts. And I don't mean once at a concert. I mean every time I go. And I don't have, stoner supersonic hearing at concerts. The thing's meant to be loud, but it's meant for you to shut up if you're there. So when I was in Abbeville, South Carolina, and this is my mother's grace shining upon me, I was in the Abbeville Opera House, built in the late 1800s. It's been there, it's restored, it's beautiful. It's maybe 400 seats, little opera house in the center of the square. And I looked up And I saw this sign, and I'm going to read this for the people who cannot hear it. But Mike, why don't you read that sign for people? Because I want it to be in your professional voice.
Oh, my professional voice.
Yes.
Big letters, notice, please do not talk during acts, as it annoys those about you and prevents a perfect hearing of the entertainment, the management.
What more could be said? That, I mean, it's one thing to go to a Queen show with fake Queen, with Adam Lambert singing Galileo, Galileo, Galileo. That's fine. But when Billy Joel sing in Vienna, in a stadium, or when Stevie Nicks is singing Landslide, you have to talk about what you ate at dinner tonight or talk about anything. I mean, sing along, sing out of key. I would wish for that, as opposed to ongoing conversations when John Mayer comes to Baltimore and you're in the fifth row next to John Mayer and he's got an acoustic guitar and nothing else. And he's singing, I don't know, pick a song, Daughters, XO, Your Body is a One, whatever it is that you're talking. This is unacceptable when the Eagles are singing Wasted Time, when Don Henley's singing Desperado. You know, it's just unacceptable, Mike.
You are talking about human behavior and common courtesy.
And alcohol.
Yeah, but people were always drinking and smoking before shows we went to when we were growing up. You didn't have to tell people to shut the fuck up.
Right.
You know? So, oops, I used the F word.
That's all right. That's fine.
You chose not to.
We blepped that out.
But that's how you want to say it.
My wife said that to the women behind us at John Mayer. And you know what? I always say to my wife, I'm not fighting with these people because I will get, we spent $300 to be here tonight, right? Like more than that. Like, and we're three songs into this and this has been going on for 8 minutes. It's going to go on the rest of the night. I said to my wife, I'm not here to give etiquette lessons. I'll just get up and move. I just literally physically get up and move because I'm not going to be fighting out loud with some jackass who clearly already has exhibited that they have no respect for anyone around them, let alone for the artist.
I will tell you.
For how much money we all spent to get there. Because none of this is cheap. It is never, ever, ever cheap to go to a concert anymore, which is all the more reason that some of these a-holes think they have a right to be disruptive, you know?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Yesterday, as you know, it was gorgeous out for November, and I couldn't see myself sitting in my basement watching football indoors all day. So at the last minute, my wife and I bought tickets to the game yesterday.
$50, $80, what'd you pay?
No, it was a tougher ticket,
okay.
Believe it or not. It was probably market value, not below market value. So I wound up sitting. The tickets I bought were on the aisle. I was 20 yard line, upper deck, but second row. So I like, you know, you can see everything there. I have the aisle, my wife's sitting next to me, and some Seahawk face painter is sitting next to her by himself. Fine. But he was screaming screaming to the point where if it was back in the day, if I was in my old section when I was in my 20s and 21 rows up, he would have gotten killed. I mean, he would have gotten killed.
And yeah, Chad Steele's made a huge mistake on a lot of levels with throwing people like me out of the section. The reason 513 was policed was because it was my section, and I policed it because it just wasn't a really good place for Steelers fans to be in 1999. It really wasn't. I mean, this was a very inhospitable place to come in and play. I'm not saying it is or isn't anymore, but like, there are a lot of empty seats, and the mojo is different than it ever was when Ray Lewis danced. And they're 7-2, and like, God bless the Seahawks have fans. They didn't have fans 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, this kid, and he was younger. He was, you know, this is no Seattle. I mean, you guys, they had the decibel meter, and he's like, he was like, you guys are really bad fans screaming it. And I was prepared to get beer shards, you know, as they were throwing stuff at him, getting shrapnel there. Fortunately, the Ravens sent him home early to the applause of everyone.
Well, you know, being a sports fan was, you know, all of it. And I don't want to get too far off the rails, but I've done this for 32 years. I didn't realize in a general sense, what jerks sports fans could be in regard to my own fame, in regard to the email and the death threats that I've gotten, in regard to drunk people out in the public in various formats for me. But I like the notion that there is a huge, especially, I mean, there's a whole bar stool built for jerks in sports, right? Like that's where you go to yell at players and fire the coach, and my star makes too much money. He's too black. He's too white. He's too left. He's too right. He's too this, you know, whatever. Went to the wrong college. I don't know. It's a barking society. And I never really understood that. When I went into sports radio, I went into this honorably, like I am with the MSA stuff this week, talking about citizens. My dad just, I was raised by an old world father who loved sports for the civic part of it, for the competition part of it, for the fairness part of it, for the integrity part of it, for the teamwork. I mean, all of that Boy Scout-ish that you hear was why I loved sports. Now, having been thrown out by the Orioles, thrown out by the Ravens, while they try to drown $2 billion off the public teat, while they block out journalists, while, you know, just all of it, having been exposed to it, I'm better off at a Sammy Hagar concert, Mike.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. I was thinking about it as you were talking. First of all, and it could be we're both getting older. Don't want to speak for you, but there was nothing more exciting from a sports standpoint than a night game, nationally televised, against the Steelers during the Ray and Ed era.
Wearing black, right?
You were just pumped, right? And I compare that feeling to going to a concert that I really, of an artist I really, really love, and the lights go down. And which of those adrenaline rushes do I like more, the music side or the sports side? Because I love them both. And I'd have to say I would probably skew to the music side, you know, just that you're looking forward to it. You haven't seen the artist for 3 years between albums. They're still in an arena that's sold out or a stadium.
I experienced that with you too, 2 weeks ago, right? Like I made a concerted effort to go to Vegas. When the whole thing happened, I'm like, I'm not going out and seeing you two without Larry Mullen. You know, I'm not going to pay blah, 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 blah. I saw them in Seoul and in Tokyo, and the Tokyo show is one of the greatest shows I've ever seen. The whole show is up on, you can go watch it. It's at Satyama from December the 8th, 2019. So we're now, was it 4 years? That's 4 years, right? So it's been 4 years. You're describing my U2 experience. And I said, I'm not going. And my buddy in Florida started watching the trailers on. He's like, dude, that building's going to be something. And he says this to me in August. That building, my buddy's a Dolphins fan, so you know he's struggling. He would much rather be at a U2 concert. And I'm like, you know, Vegas and Sphere and like all that. Then it opened, and the night it opened, I had five friends there. John Modell, who I'm very close with, David's brother, Art's son. John and I went to Pearl Jam together out in Oakland. He lives in the Bay Area, and John and I are close. And I love John Modell. I will always love John Modell. And he loves rock and roll, loves music. He played one at his brother's funeral. John and I, the night before the Ravens game in Wembley in 2017, we did the Pink Floyd Wall exhibit at the British Museum of Art, next to Royal Albert Hall. And we like immersed in the, so like John loves music. John's involved in music. John's company produced the U2 3D movie. Do you remember this?
I don't.
There's a U2 3D movie. You can look it up. It was shot in Mexico City. It was shot in South America. I went to one of the shows it was shot at. I was at the Sao Paulo, Brazil show. Primarily a lot of that was shot in Mexico City, at the big stadium that they have there, Azteca. So you can go Google that movie and check it out, but it's 3D. And David would always tell me, David said they went to New York. He and Art was alive at the time. And John, they all went to New York to screen the final product, because John was involved, invested in a company that did 3D technology, 3D TVs. Remember 3D TVs, right?
Yep.
So
there was
a point where Adam Clayton took his bass guitar and like tried to shoot, you know, like take your head off with it, like axing your head, and you would duck because the 3D was such a, you know. So there was a point, and David loved telling me the story. He's like, man, we're in a suite and there's art and we all have our glasses on, and Bono's with us and it's just us. And Bono takes his glasses off and he says, David, it's a mind fuck. And so I remember this. So John wound up at the first U2 show 5 weeks ago, whatever. And I woke up at 4 a.m. and all the reviews, I had five friends that were there, a couple of U2 buddies, a couple of people connected in the industry. They were all like, greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. They'd all seen U2. They've all done concerts. They've all been to Stones. They're like, whatever your concert is, they've all been to Grammys and this and that. And they were all over the moon the first night. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to figure this out and go and do it. And you're always searching for the next heroin rush, right? You're always searching for the next Ray Lewis, the next Monday night game, the next great concert, the next great band, the next great experience, the next thing you see that you've never seen before. And the Sphere's like that, dude. Like, I don't know what you're going to ask me, what's it like? And I'm like, I can show you the video and all that, but it's kind of like, you got to go see it. It's kind of like the Talking Heads thing, you know,
sensory overload, like anxiety. Like, did you feel you were falling, or do seats move? Does wind blow through your hair?
So you two sort of did this on the last tour. Did you see the Joshua Tree Stadium tour?
Not.
Okay. Well, if you would have seen that on the floor, you would have experienced something that was like levitating. And I mean this sincerely. I saw the show 10 times. I saw the show on the floor in Paris, Indianapolis, Seattle, Vancouver, Tokyo, Dublin. I saw that show all over the world. And every time I saw it on the floor, now in DC, I was on the side. I'm trying to think of some other, I saw it a couple of times on the side. So it was a little different, but if you were on the floor at U2 during the Joshua Tree tour, they had stadium video across the boards. And Anton Corbin, if you Google his name, he shot a lot of videos. He's a videographer and a cinematographer. He shot desert scenes in the desert, the Joshua Tree, and on roads and in the desert and in the Middle East, and these incredible sunrise sunset things that, and I'll just like, you two played five songs before the show started on that tour. They would play Sunday Bloody Sunday, some version of Bad, New Year's Day, Pride. They're playing those songs. And then they would march back to the stadium stage and the opening organ for Where the Streets Have No Name would play. And the lights would come up. And right when the guitars, I Want to Run, I Want to Hide, the video was moving and the screens moved in a way that you felt like you were flying. And everyone on the floor, you heard them. It was like a carnival. Like you would just take off. You would just literally take off. I can't explain it other than it happened. And then three or four other times during the show, there would be an optical illusion where you would move, but you're not moving and you're on a stadium floor. And they took that. And if I ever could talk to Bono, or like if I ever interviewed him, I'm sure that that first thought, that when this Sphere thing came to them, they're like, okay, we get it. Because every single night we see 80,000 people feel like they're levitating. And it's not because they've never heard I Want to Run, I Want to Hide. It's because something physically is happening to their mind of the optical illusion. Have you ridden, have you been to Epcot?
Yes.
Have you ridden Soaring, the ride?
Yes.
All right.
It's like your own hand glider, right?
Tell me what that's like to fly through an IMAX where sound and sight and motion are brought to life in a way where you get off that ride and you're like, oh my God, I just flew through Africa.
It's exactly what you feel like.
Okay. So the Sphere tries to bring that in, and I don't know what they would ever do with smell or what other things they could do, but the whole place is so wavy gravy from the minute you walk up to it. And I walked up to it alone on a Friday night. The sun was setting. I was watching the ball game. I had a couple beers. And I walked up. From the minute you walk up, you feel like you've entered a whole different place. The lighting, the sound, it has like twinkly water sounds outside. You feel like you're entering another place, another dimension. You walk in. And then I walked into a suite. Like I was backstage with Alice Cooper and having free beer. But it was very dark. And very purposely moody. And then before the show, there was a DJ for an hour that the walls came to life and kind of like get you in the mood for it. So like when the band comes on, I would just say, if you have a chance to go, and I didn't spend a fortune. I mean, I got a face value ticket. I was very fortunate. You know, I spent under $300. It was worth under $300, but it's, you have to go. I mean, like you have to see something there that's made for there, and U2's as good as anything. But if you're searching for that rush, and you were the one talking about St. Louis and dancing, because the Ravens games aren't the same, right? I mean, I don't know what this, I mean, you can love the team, you can love Lamar, but that vibe's not the same. They can say third down is what it is, and John could kiss the ass of the fans and stuff. But I was there when it was a hellhole, and it's not yet. It might be in January, but it's not right now.
Right. Yeah, like I said, I don't know if it's, you know, the worth very similar in age. I don't know if it's just that's what you do when you become 55, 56-year-olds and you're like, it's not as good as it was when I was, you know, in my early 40s or late 30s and I was going with my kids. But it does feel different to me, that's for sure.
You don't feel like you have to be there. Let's start with that.
Well, absolutely. But that's, for me personally, that's because my kids are out of town and it's sad to go without them. So that's another story. But
you would be really sad. Wife. Take me.
I went with my wife and she was happy to go. And we had a great day and we enjoyed the weather and we enjoyed the vibe. And it was good. It was really a good afternoon. I will tell you that.
Well, it was a day I missed being there, but the football was so great at home. I mean, the Chiefs and the Dolphins and then the Eagles and it was a great day. I don't want to say to sit inside because it was such a beautiful, beautiful day.
That's why I wanted to get out because I know we're going to be stuck in.
So what do you make for the team? Like Mike Rosenfeld is here. He's our partner at Web Connection. We're just rambling on about concerts. And I guess, you know, my headline for this will be shut up at concerts, please. And the facilities, if Lowell wants to do something really good, Frank Remish down at the arena, put some signs up encouraging people to not be jerks when the band's playing. And that's not for CFG Bank Arena. That's for anywhere and everywhere. I'm getting very get off my lawnish about it because I've had my experiences wrecked, you know, like consistently. And it's really weighing on whether I ever want to see John Mayer in an acoustic fashion again, like ever.
Right.
Because if you can't shut up when John Mayer is playing guitar and you're there to see John Mayer and you pay $200 to see John Mayer and you feel compelled to have a conversation, I often wonder what you're doing there, but I often wonder what I'm doing there.
I hear you. I mean, it's not just concerts. It's just it's decency and respect and it's just an issue beyond concerts.
Well, I know when you're going to see you're going to see U2 at the Sphere when you go to see the Ravens in the Super Bowl in Las Vegas, right?
I don't know if they're still playing that. I think they did. They extended. Yeah. We should be so lucky. That's the second Super Bowl reference, Billy Cole.
You can go to watch the Ravens win the Super Bowl, and the game ends at 7 o'clock out there, and you can jump in an Uber and go over to the Sphere and see U2 that night. That's what
a doubleheader that would be.
No, you're looking for the rush, dog. I mean, come on now. I got Purple Rain 1 on my desk here. Anthony Mitchell called me in the middle of this segment, believe it or not, because we misconnected. And I was looking for this picture of Anthony Mitchell. That's Keaton Mitchell's father for the young people out there, for your kids. And it turns out he's on the cover of my book, and Stacey Keibler is on our lap. Like literally future Hall of Famer, the current Hall of Famer, WWE Hall of Famer, Stacey Keibler. So like that's Purple Rain 1. And then there's Purple Rain 2 where we went down to New Orleans. They turned the lights out, Joe Flacco. Like, I know we're trying to chase that rush, right? I'm trying to chase 1983 with the Orioles and whatever. And this is what it's about. Like, if you're not excited about them at 7-2 with Cleveland and Cincinnati coming to town, then I don't know what you're waiting for. Like, they're a Super Bowl contender. They're as good a team as constructed right this minute with their health as they've been at any minute from 1996 till they got here right now. They have as good a chance of winning a Super Bowl right now as they've ever had.
I would agree. I mean, they're fun to watch on both sides of the ball. I mean, I've always been the guy who, if given a choice, I'd rather see a tight 20-17 defensive battle than, 35-38. But on both sides of the ball, they're exciting. Lamar, to me, other than the long balls, which he's struggles with, his passes are spot on. Decision making seems to be better, not forcing things. They're coming up with first downs on third and long. It's just fun to watch. Even the Cardinals game was not fun. I mean, my kids and I are
But
like,
they were down 37-3 every week. And I
no.
would ask you, how much fun is it when they win 30? Now, look, I won them to win in January 37-3. I mean, nobody wants to bite their nails, but there is a point where, like, a game like that, everybody leaves in the third quarter. I wouldn't want that every week, but you do, but you don't, but you
Yeah,
don't want
you
to see them
do. You'll
scuffle against bad teams.
take it, but you don't want to be tortured. Like the two losses were torture. Like, what is going on? Like, it's torture. And I
What
don't
the
want to
Eagles put
spend.
their fans through on Sunday.
I mean, I don't want torture. I'll take being able to breathe, halfway through the fourth quarter and feeling like you have the game in control. But even game, even like the Cardinals game, it wasn't pretty, but you felt, they were in control. And obviously, you can argue, and I don't know if the other two lost teams can do the same, but they could have and should have won those two games. Could have, would have, should have. It doesn't matter. But I think they're a good team. I'm with you. They're fun to watch. They got to stay healthy. We're getting into the time where there's like six games left, which is when Lamar hasn't been available. So you cross your fingers. I was very grateful to see them take him out in the fourth quarter. There was no reason for him to be there. And I hope Pete Carroll understood that you let Snoop try to run the offense in case, rather than just run the ball, just in case he's needed. And instead of just having mop up time, he had meaningful minutes. There's just a lot to like, in my opinion, about the game.
Well, then Odell Beckham catches the pass, and Lamar and the team's happy for him. So, look, as John Harbaugh said in the post game, they work very, very hard to get it to look like this. And when it looks like this, it's like when you put together a website or web plan for people, web connection. It's like when somehow, some way, I book Andy Summers onto the program and it happens, and I book John Waters onto the program and it happens, and I get myself involved in this Maryland Stadium Authority because none of the other real media want to tell facts about the billions of dollars we're giving these billionaires. Then I get fired up about it. And I think being fired up about the team right now, being fired up about the defense, because Luke and I have talked about the defense and what that means to Lamar not having to play in the fourth quarter because the defense has been that good. The offense, field goals, kick three field goals in the first half. All right, now it's 17-3, and Lamar has to play in the second half instead of 30-3.
Right.
And touchdowns, defense allow Lamar some break. But things are going to change, man. I mean, they're done playing Josh Dobbs and PJ Walkers. And I mean, Cleveland, Deshaun Watson, 27-0, real defense. Cincinnati, short rest, Burrow's back. They just beat the Bills. They're real. They have to go, they're going to have to go out to LA twice, LA and then San Francisco. They have Jacksonville on the road. They have Miami. They have real quarterbacks. They're going to see playoff caliber quarterbacks more frequently than not over the remaining part of the schedule. And this is where you're going to bite your nails because I don't think they're going to go down to Jacksonville, win 37-3. I don't think
No
they're going
way.
to go out to San Francisco on Christmas night, win 37-3. They're going to have problems. They're going to have mistakes. They're going to have turnovers like they did against Arizona. Look, I wrote the, when they beat the Lions, I'm like, you couldn't be any more impressive than they were beating the Lions. And like, don't expect that every week. And then Arizona happens and everybody's biting their nails. That's the league at this
It
point.
is the league.
That is the league.
Yeah.
And that's where you don't want to stub your toe. But more than that, you want to stay healthy. The reason they're accomplishing all of this is because they have good health right now. I'm convinced of that.
For sure. Well, as we're winding down, I do have a story to tell you. You may be able to appreciate
Okay, sure.
between last conversation and this conversation. You asked where I've been. I forgot that I did travel to Detroit for a wedding, and of course, I was in Detroit when Detroit Lions were in Baltimore. So the wedding was on a Sunday night, not a Saturday night. So the Friday
All
night,
Lions fans?
all Lions fans, except for one Bengal fan,
So
Saran
they had a
Papa.
really bad lead up to the wedding that day, is what you're telling me.
Well, the Saturday night, you know, for out of towners was a lot of people. I mean, there was, it wasn't just out of towners. There was like a lot of people chirping my ear. You ready? And I did expect a battle, and I was intimidated to what the Lions could potentially bring. And I was like, during Sunday, I was like, please win, because the wedding Sunday night, please win. And no one was talking. Everyone's giving me the head nod after that spanking. And then there was the guy from.
Imagine being a Lions fan, though.
It's tough.
Where's your Ray Lewis moment if you're a Lions fan? What's the thing over your lifetime that you've gotten excited about if you're a Detroit Lion? I mean, I'm serious. Like, as Ravens fans, I don't think we're really spoiled in a general sense as far as what our measurement of fun would be versus most other places. Most other places.
Well, we're fortunate there. That's why I was going to say there was one guy who I've become, you know, friendly with through this group of people, who's a diehard Bengals fan. And we were talking about Lamar and Joe Burrow and having that franchise quarterback. But I was like, I don't have faith in Mike Brown, the owner of the Bengals. He does not have a track record. I think one thing that we are fortunate, and we can see this from the difference between the Orioles and the Ravens. I mean, when the Ravens had to restock and, you know, Ed Reed, who I think is my all-time favorite Raven player, and Ray Lewis and you know, that Super Bowl team, and it's done. Just the ability to just have a year or two to rebuild, but it's not like you're going to the bottom and you have to wait. I mean, you're right. The Lions fans have just been brutal. They always rip their heart out. And there's so many teams out there that just are mediocre at best. And even the Browns, and maybe a lot of your listeners won't appreciate this, I feel bad for Cleveland Brown fans because how they lost their team. You and I both know what the NFL did to us when we tried to get expansion teams, and the Bidwells teased us by bringing the Cardinals and used us to get better deals elsewhere. We did everything we possibly could, but to steal another city's team left a bad taste in my mouth. Don't get me wrong, I was happy to have a team. And they got their colors back and they got their team back and we didn't. But I feel bad, but they just can't, that organization cannot get out of their way to not go through coaches and not go through quarterbacks. And
well, I mean, imagine signing like, you know, a serial sexual predator and making him your quarterback and saying, here, go cheer for this.
What about, was it Hunt, who they just signed off the street, who no team would sign because of domestic violence?
Yeah, you know, once you have Deshaun Watson, like, you know, what's your...
Exactly. So
where's your bar?
It is what it is.
There is no floor. Hey, man, the Browns are in this weekend. Bengals are in next week. Mike Rosenfeld is out there doing all things chief digital officer work for us here at Baltimore Positive, as well as for you. You can find him at Web Connection. Tell me what you do, because it's a little, you know, it's not for everybody, but I think everybody can understand that they need somebody that understands more about the web than they do, which is why I have you in my world.
Yeah, I think once people understand what it is, they can appreciate that there's an opportunity if they want to play ball. So basically, what Web Connection, we're outsourced chief digital officers. We work with small to mid-sized companies who can hire a full-time chief digital officer. And for those of you who don't know what the chief digital officer role is, we're responsible for creating the strategy for your website, your email marketing, your social media strategy, your content marketing strategy, your online advertising strategy, creating something that works for you so that you can compete, so that you're not in a position that you're tired of seeing all of your competitors kick your butt. And now, being in November, most of my prospects are now looking at their budgets for 2024, trying to figure out what they need to do to compete, to do better, to leverage AI, to have a digital strategy and to grow their business. So if you're one of them just trying to figure out budgeting, and, you know, frankly, we worked it out so that it's affordable for most small businesses. We're fractional experts. We'd love to have a conversation with you and see how we can help.
Well, dude, you blew my mind like 9 months ago when you came in with that chat GPT and we're making purple birds out of things. And
Yeah.
for my business, and I don't think it's any secret, I've downsized what I've done here over 25 years of doing this to be more self-sufficient, as opposed to people efficient, sufficient or dependent, I should say, people dependent. And I don't know where AI is for me, but I know there's got to be a place for me. And the more I see it and recognize it. And look, dude, I'm an old guy, but I'm a first mover about all this from Twitter and Facebook and the web and Baltimore Positive to begin with. I really do feel like I'm at it's the beginning. It's still not too late to get involved in AI, right?
Oh, absolutely not. And you and I will have discussions about how you should be leveraging it. You will. But everyone at least should understand what it is, what its impact is, how it could affect your business, how you prepare so that you're not caught with your pants down, for lack of a better
I think a
analogy.
lot of the marketing's been on fear of it to some
Yeah.
degree, not on leveraging it, right?
Yeah, but it's right. It's appropriate to be both eyes wide open and fearful of what the possibilities are if it's not managed properly, just like anything else. Just like, I never thought, and we've talked about this in the past, that social media and fake accounts could manipulate democracies' elections,
But it did.
but it did. So, for every application that is meant for good, there's going to be people on the bad side lining up to see how they can take advantage of it.
Show you how old I am. I made my first ever purchase on Amazon last night.
No way.
I'm being honest. Like, my son has an account. It's the one I break into on Thursday to watch Thursday Night Football when I do. My wife uses it because it's Prime. And she orders, my wife's a wife. She orders stuff, she clicks. And whenever we buy anything, she'll say, "I'm ordering some stuff on Amazon. What do you need?" And I'm like, "Scotch tape, Bic pens, whatever it is," right? She'll get it. But I did this on my own last night during the game. It was like 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. And my shoes, I have knees and back, and everybody knows my back screwed up. It's one of the reasons Chad Steele threw me out because I couldn't make it to games a couple years ago. I'm feeling better. I'm on the yoga mat. I'm strong. But my shoes, and I got into these great shoes over at the Charm City Run, and I like was looking online for old model. It's like a 2-year-old model now. It's a 22, and they're into the 24 model. So I went to the 22 model and found some remnant stuff, and I saw this shoe online, right? And this was last night. And this shoe was like a $180 shoe, but it was $99 online because it's like old and they're trying to get rid of it. And it's kind of an interesting color. So I clicked on Amazon last night, and my wife's like, "Just click here, click here, click here." And I found the shoe and I found my size and I clicked it in and it was all there. And it was my credit card, my address, not my son's. And I went click, 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 and it said place order, and I placed the order. And I looked at her and I'm like, "So they're just going to show up, right?" She's like, "Yeah." This morning, I got up, I had coffee, 10 o'clock in the morning. I walk out, there's a box on the table. I was like, "Your shoes came." I'm like, "I just ordered them like 6 hours ago. Like, how's that even possible?" And here they are. And I'm thinking, I'm not long for the world.
Look,
Like, you know what I mean? I don't know what to say, you know?
I don't know the exact demographics of your audience, but 95% of your audience just said, "Yeah, he described my experience from 6 years
2008,
ago."
right? Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Look, I
Dude.
get all the boxes here. I'm just not the one poking around. And when it
Right.
happened, I literally looked at, because I ordered two pair, because I have a pair that was going to go with my new jacket, sort of a blue and brown kind of combination, because I need to be more muted in my look.
Right.
I need to be more conservative.
Or
And I turned.
wait until you discover you like different types of food and exotic food, and you try things, and you're gonna find,
I'm
if
not
you
Uber eating.
want.
I'm going out and getting my food. I will drive to Royal Farms. My wife tried to get me to Uber Eats 2 pieces of Royal Farms chicken and some fries because we didn't want to go up. I'm like, "I'm not Uber eating that. I'm not. I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to drive up there. I'm going to get ice cream with it." That's exactly what I did on Saturday night.
Yeah, you can't Uber Eats ice cream. That
But
doesn't
I
go
clicked this
very well.
button for $211 for these two pairs of shoes, and they're fantastic. And I turned to my wife and I'm like, "That's really dangerous.
Yeah,
What I just did. What I
my
just did is
favorite
really
is
dangerous."
I found small batch gourmet sunflower seeds from Austin, Texas, that I reorder all the time. That's my snack, so I don't eat real food at night.
You played a lot of baseball if you're eating sunflower seeds.
Just slowly eat those. So anyway, it's all good.
All right. Mike Rosenfeld is here. He will teach you how to order things on Amazon and get your life together from all things digital. He is at WebConnection. I just had to tell that story because it's true. I just had never ordered. And today's like day one of me being like, I'm going to like block myself from that website because I'm like, now I'm scared of all the things that I might need or I might want. If you need him and you want him and you need some really important work done on your website and all SEO, everything you need, Web Connection is the way to do that. If you need good sports radio, the fans down the we're here at AM 1570. I will be here all week. Luke is in Owings Mills. He is at Baltimore. Luke, we're getting ready for Cleveland, getting ready for Cincinnati, and doing a lot of stuff on the stadium circumstance, which I have not discussed with Mike, but I will in the future. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking rock and roll and shutting up at concerts.